Hi, I'm Gary Walker, and here on The Checkout, we're chatting with film director Alan Hicks and producer Quincy Jones, the life and times and mentoring skills of the great Clark Terry. It's a new documentary called Keep On Keeping On.
When I first met Clark Terry, I must have been about 13 years old, and there was a theater there where all the big guys came, the Palomar Theater. And I just used to sit and listen to him play, you know.
When I was with Basie's small group, this kid, this little skinny, scrawny-looking kid, would come by the gig every night, and he'd say to me, "Mr. Terry, my name is Quincy Jones, and I would like to take some lessons from you."
He was my idol, man. At that time, I didn't know anything. You know, I just was hell-bent on being even just around this man, you know, to hear whatever he had to say.
And he was real thin, skinny. He was thin enough to ride a rooster. So I said, "Well, you go to school and you're sleeping all night, and I'm up in the clubs all over the place. When you go to school in the daytime, that's when I'm sleeping."
Of course, it takes a lot of courage, you know, to go to somebody like that. But, I mean, it's my only chance, you know. If I didn't say something, that may never have happened.
The film Keep On Keeping On, you referenced, you were a very young guy when you went to the Palomar. What gave you the courage to go there?
The courage, it was being inquisitive and nosy. Man, they had no TV then. And all the new bebop songs that came from Bird in New York, there was no communication. And so everybody that came through there, it would be Sammy Davis, he'd have his vinyl playing and earphones on, playing bongos with it. Milton May, Billy Eckstein had watched Bobby Tucker's fingers on the keys, playing. That was a young kid, you know. And Clark Terry, and I just want to be around him and hear all the slangs, everything, man, and grow, you know. And with Clark, I basically had only four horns back then. Wardell Gray, Serge Taloff, Buddy DeFranco, and Clark. That's as good as it gets, man. And he lost all his money gambling, you know, so he couldn't keep his big band together. So he had to stay in Vancouver and Seattle and Oregon to stay off the East Coast because he wanted to know he was broke, you know. And Billy Eckstein gave him money to put his big band back together. Eckstein did.
Pretty tight, small group.
Yes, though. It is. That's pretty good, man. I was there every day, man, just listening and learning. And
what kind of reception did you get from Clark Terry?
Well, he said I was a little skinny dude, you know. but most people feel like this. And I know people come and ask for autographs and pictures. They say, "Well, I'm never going to see you again. This is the only shot I got, so I can't help it whether you're upset or not." But I had to ask Clark. I couldn't resist it, because you don't ask, you don't get, you know. And I said, "I just love to study with you, because my mouth used to bleed when I put the horn like that because my armature was wrong." And he said, "No, put it up here." And diaphragmatic breathing, all that stuff. He teaches us science. That Clark goes to the science of, he's dealing with the left brain, you know, and that's the one where the work comes, you know. In the picture, he says, they don't work hard enough, you know.
I find it fascinating that a guy that was born in St. Louis, poor, you don't know poor, until you look at the background of Clark Terry.
My full name is Clark Terry Jr. I was born in 1920 in St. Louis, Missouri, 6207 South Broadway. I'm one of 11 kids, and we were dead poor. My dad was a hard-working man. I was 7 years old when my mother passed, and I've been missing her dearly ever since. I was about 10 years old when I first heard the Ellington Band, and it blew my mind. After hearing that band, I wanted to play the trumpet so bad that I made one. So I went down to the dump, found an old piece of hose, and bent it around. Then I took an old kerosene funnel, stuck it in the end, and made a bell out of it. In the other end, I took a piece of lead pipe and made a mouthpiece out of it. Of course, I didn't know that lead was poisonous at the time.
Going in the junkyard and finding that horn with the hose and the funnel and the lead pipe and didn't care, didn't know that lead was poisonous.
And didn't care.
And started playing.
Yeah, it's amazing. My grandmother lived there, too, down in the place. We had the same kind of affluent neighborhood, you know. Joke. Terrible.
But I find it fascinating that his inspiration for going to that junkyard was hearing Duke Ellington. And then a little more than a decade later, he's on a stage being introduced by Duke Ellington.
And 12 years after that, he comes and joins my band. It's crazy, man.
He leaves Duke Ellington to come to Paris.
With Quentin Jackson.
Free and easy.
Quentin came too. Butter, remember Quentin Butter Jackson?
Yeah.
Yeah, they both came to Paris. I almost had a heart attack. It was so beautiful. That's really the biggest honor I ever had in my life, man.
And then you returned that favor later on, didn't you? Clark Terry broke racial barriers, too, in addition to his exceptional abilities to reach out, you know, each one teach one. Why, he's done that thousands of times. But he also broke racial barriers at NBC and opened doors for a whole lot of musicians while that kind of thing still existed in this town. And out west, too.
Heavy.
Hi, I'm Gary Walker, and here on The Checkout, we're chatting with film director Alan Hicks and producer Quincy Jones, the life and times and mentoring skills of the great Clark Terry. It's a new documentary called Keep On Keeping On. I sat down with the director and producer to talk about this legendary musician and inspiration to so many who come after him. Alan, what inspired you to make this film? You're not a filmmaker. Well, you are now, but you weren't then.
Just tell him. He's really in it now.
Originally it was to be a short piece on myself and Clark for Australian TV and our friendship. But that fell through, and I was surfing with a buddy of mine, a guy called Adam Hart, who's the cinematographer in the film. And I just said, hey, this idea for a film about Clark popped up, and I'm upset that it didn't come through. And he just said, mate, we'll just do it ourselves. Let's just go for it. And so we paddled in, saved some money, bought a camera, and started learning how to make a documentary. And using that whole idea with studying jazz, you know, repetition and really working hard into documentary, trying to really understand how to make one. And then we just started shooting for a year with Clark and just getting as much of his history as we could. And because I'd spent all these years with him already, I knew a lot of the stories and was able to document all of that stuff. And we had lots of great stories and lots of interviews from musicians like Jimmy Heath and Herbie Hancock, and they would all say Clark's one of the greatest trumpet players and flugelhornist of all time, but he's also one of the greatest teachers. And we had the archival to back it up of Clark as a player, but we didn't have him with a student. So that's when I approached Justin Coughlin, who was in the band with us, and he was always studying with Clark, and asked if we could follow him as well. And as soon as we made that shift, the story just started to blossom and go in places where I couldn't have predicted.
When I finally lost my sight, I didn't have video games anymore. I didn't have basketball or just going outside to play with my friends.
That went away. After that went away, I was like, well, what do I have to do? What can I do? You know, I went to school and I'm here at home. What is there? And I kind of just gravitated towards the piano, just kind of sat at the piano. and fell in love with it that way.
Did you see something special between Justin and CT?
Yeah, most definitely. Like, because with Justin, the way Justin met Clark is Clark was actually losing his sight while I was in his band, and he was fretting about it a lot. And Justin happened to come to the college at that same time, and I just asked Clark if I could bring Justin around, this young blind kid, and he said, yeah, no worries. And so I brought Justin over, and that first night that they met, I was there with them, and Justin just was telling Clark about his experience going blind, and how it really calmed Clark down, you know, hearing from this young kid that had just, he'd gone blind 7 years earlier. And Clark's got synesthesia, and so does Justin, seeing colours with music. And I think, Quincy, you've got that too, yeah? You see colour with music.
Synesthesia.
Yep. And so he was explaining that to Clark as well, because for Justin, it's a very visual experience listening to music. And anyways, that's the foundation of their relationship. It started there, not as a young piano player trying to get to Clark Terry. It was actually a very mutual friendship. And then Clark heard him play and was like, man, you've got to join my band.
But at the same time, when he brings him into the fold and teaches him, there's a friendliness, but there's a sternness, because he says you got to try harder. You got to try harder, right?
Yeah.
You just don't want to do it. You want to do it right.
Well, that's Clark, man. He's the master, you know, and there's a lot of, it's actually very tough studying with Clark as well. It's because he cares so much about his students.
And it should be like that, too. That's what makes you better. The guys don't try hard enough. That's the one they didn't like. Because they say, I always tell my kids that the dictionary is the only place you find work or success before work, and that's alphabetical. You gotta work, man. Gotta work. God gives you a talent. You owe God the work.
They say that you can always sense through a person's music the type of person he is, you know. And there's something to that, because I know there's some guys who are vicious, uptight, and evil, and they sound vicious, uptight, and evil. And I would like not to sound vicious, uptight, and evil. I like to sound relaxed and enjoyable, and even in some cases, beautiful, you know. Although I'm an old, ugly ham, you know. I'd like to think of at least my soul as being beautiful.
Yeah, that reference in the movie when Clark's talking about people that are vicious, uptight, and evil will sound vicious, uptight, and evil, and he doesn't want to sound like that. He wants to sound beautiful, and you know, and that's a big theme in the film, is trying to find your own voice. Something that intrigued me so much about Clark is, like, what is it that this guy does to help these people find themselves? And that was I was making a discovery along the way in the filmmaking to try and work that out. And to me, I learned that it's about being a good person first. And that's something that Clark's really passionate about.
Clark Terry playing with Bob Brookmeyer Quintet, Haig & Haig, from the recording Gingerbread. Keep On Keepin' On is the name of the film documentary about Clark Terry, directed by Alan Hicks, and starring the legendary Quincy Jones. They talked to WBGO's Gary Walker. Go to keeponkeepinon.com to learn more about the movie. Coming up next, Lady Gaga sings The Great American Songbook. She joins WBGO's Michael Bourne. This is The Checkout. I'm Simon Rettner.